Well, good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to see all of you again. I know it's been a while. We intended to come earlier this month, but unfortunately, we got called to be in Abilene that day instead, so to help them out some more. That church is still grieving and trying to grow and get past the hardship that was losing their preacher a few months ago. I know Debbie is understanding the pain of losing someone close to them, family member. Thank you again for your thoughts and encouragement through posting Facebook and such, of reaching out to my family and our loss of my grandfather in the past couple weeks. He's a great man, and we're so very blessed to have had his time, to have time in our lives, to see him and be the example he was for us. With that, let's go ahead and move into the lesson this morning. This morning we're going to be talking about profanity. Interesting word. Powerful word. Because it carries actually different definitions for things. Currently, the definition for profanity means to be blasphemous or to have obscene language. And we see that now. We watch TV shows when a profane word, cuss word, curse word is going to come out. What are they going to do? They censor that word. They make it where you don't know actually what they're saying, even though you have a good idea of what is being said. It's because they're trying to supposedly spare the younger crowds, I'm talking under 18, from hearing these words and encourage them to use them in their language, but that really doesn't help the fact at all. Profanity is a powerful thing. It's something that wants us to censor in our lives. But the Bible does not define profanity in that way. The Bible defines profanity as treating holy things as common. Turn over, if you will, to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12, starting in verse 14, talks about profanity and gives a great example of somebody who is profane or does some profane things. Hebrews chapter 12, starting in verse 14, it reads, "Pursue peace with all men, and the sanctification without which no one will see the Lord. See to it that no one comes short of the grace of God, that the root of bitterness springing up causes trouble, and by it many be defiled. That there be no immoral or godless person like Esau." Now, if you're using the New King James Version, that word godless is actually replaced with the word profane. Esau, but the Hebrew writer is saying, is a profane man. He treated something that was holy in his life as common, and the verse finishes up with it. "Who sold his own birthright for a single meal." I don't know if you're aware of the significance of this birthright, the things that came with it, but it was something special. It was something that should have been treated as holy with honor, and Esau did not. Turn over to Genesis 25 as we'll review that story. Let's review the story in Genesis 25, and starting in verse 27. Esau did this rather profane thing in his life. Genesis 25, verse 27. Said, "When the boys grew up, Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the field. But Jacob was a peaceful man, living in tents. Now Isaac loved Esau because he had a taste for game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. And when Jacob had cooked stew, Esau came in from the field and was famished. And Esau said to Jacob, 'Please, let me have a swallow of that red stuff there, for I am famished.' Therefore his name was called Edom. But Jacob said, 'First, sell me your birthright.' And Esau says, 'Behold, I am about to die. So of what use then is the birthright to me?' And Jacob said, 'First, swear to me.' So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and little stew, and he ate and drank, and he rose and went on his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright." There is significance to that birthright. If Esau had not done this thing, history would have been changed. The line would not go Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It would have gone Abraham, Isaac, and Esau. Esau could have been and was supposed to be the patriarch of the family. The line was supposed to come through Esau, his right as firstborn. But if he despises his birthright and gives it away like it's nothing, treating this holy thing, this special thing, something given to his family by God, as common, it's something that should be bargained and given away. Profane. Something that is profane. So how do we avoid making things in our lives that are supposed to be holy, that are supposed to be treated as special and unique? How do we avoid making those things profane in our lives? First, I want to talk about our words. The importance of our words. Our words bring many important holy things to life. Most importantly, though, is God's holy name. Now, we don't have any records of Esau speaking the name of God, but what we do see here is that he's become involved, and so involved, with the gods of his many, many wives. He does not have any respect for Jehovah God. Effectively, they're marrying all these women, as it says, being so involved with their gods, he's effectively spitting on the name of God, the God of his ancestors. That word hallowed, when you say God's hallowed name, means honor is holy, to make holy. Jesus makes a lot of important emphasis on that in Luke chapter 11. In Luke 11, when the apostles, the disciples come and say, they ask him how to pray. He says in starting verse 1, it happened that when Jesus was praying in a certain place, after he finished, one of his disciples said to him, Lord, teach us to pray, just as John also taught his disciples. And he said to them, when you pray, say, Father, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come. He begins the prayer, this example prayer, the model prayer, with the seriousness of God's name. Make hallowed be your name. Be holy is your name, God. And we also remember the third command that God gave his people in Exodus 20, verse 7, when they're talking about the Ten Commandments. Exodus 20, verse 7. Shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not leave him unpunished who takes his name in vain. The name of God is supposed to be seen as holy, as reverent. It's important. It's a special thing. In fact, if you were a scribe under the old law and you were recording the Old Testament, when you came to the name of God, you had to stop, go and perform a cleansing ritual to make sure that you and your wife were clean and free of sin. Then you could come back and continue to write the name of God. It was something seen as important and special to them. It was not treated as something common. In fact, that's one of the reasons, or the reasons, that the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the priests, used in Jesus' trial. They said he had been blaspheming the name of God, because he called himself the Son of God, claiming himself to be one of the Godhead. That was one of the examples they used in his trial, as blaspheming the name of God. And unfortunately, in our modern culture, though, the language and name of God has become a shout of acclamation in unused and unholy manners. A lot of times when people send texts, when something crazy has happened or something they can't believe, they send three letters. O-M-G. They say, oh my God. Using a very unholy and profane way to what the name of God is supposed to be is something special and unique. And there are other words after that will also do the same thing. They're just twisted in different variations on that. Gosh, golly, jeez. What do you not think about? about, but when you actually go back and look at the root from where these words come from, they come from God and Jesus. Names that are supposed to be treated as holy, as special, but are used in common, unholy ways. Our words are powerful things. When we're speaking the name of God, speaking the words that He has given to us to share, let's make sure that we're not using them in common ways, in ways that would profane the message of what's being said. So the first thing is our words. Secondly is our worship. And watching out to make sure our worship itself does not become profane. Esau's worship was not towards God, but towards his wife's gods. And it caused his family a lot of great distress and grief. When we look in Genesis at chapter 26, Genesis 26 and verses 34 and 35, it says, when Esau was 40 years old, he married Judith, the daughter of Beeri, the Hittite, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite. In the fourth part is verse 35, and they brought three to Isaac and to Rebekah. Probably because they could see what was going to happen. They saw what these people, the nation, the land did, the gods they worshipped. They were not good things. Molech was counted among them. A god of child sacrifice. Probably they want their beloved son to be worshipping his people. Isaac told Jacob, don't worship ladies here. Don't marry women here in the land. Go back to where I got your mother from and find someone there, because we know those people have a respect for God. They worship God. Esau did not worship God. And sometimes we need to be careful that our worship does not go in that same direction. Because there's been a current change of perspective in worship throughout the religious world as a whole. That we're moving away from a God-centered worship into a man-centered worship. Celebrating, honoring, revering men and sometimes women who are needy, who are preaching, who are praying. Instead of the real reason that we come together to worship God. They're changing the perspective onto them to bring honor on them. Making it more about the personal I, me, and my kind of sentences that come out of worship instead of God. Now, there's nothing wrong at all with trying to make your relationship with God more personal. In fact, I have found some great encouragement in going through the Psalms and reading through them and replacing the words of describing other people, others, me, with the personal I, with my own name. I think it brings some deeper meaning to what that psalm is saying when you personalize it to help you see what the psalmist is saying. But when you take that and bring it into the worship, you're making the worship, which is supposed to be holy, more common. Because we're forgetting about who it's supposed to be centered on. It changes that perspective from praising God back to me. And that's what you do when you use the first person in your writing. And you're speaking, you're changing the subject back on to me, the person. Worship's about God, the Father. When we have made what is supposed to be a holy and special time for gathering to worship God profane, it becomes about the creation rather than the Creator. Well, what about a heart that has come to worship? Where are our hearts when they come to worship? When we come together, have things become rather mundane? You come in knowing that it's going to be this exact same setup every time. I've heard people use that as a reason why they don't offer Lord's Supper every Sunday. Because when you offer it every Sunday, it becomes common. It becomes a standard. You lose the importance and significance of it. And that's a problem. That's a real problem. That sometimes we forget the reason that we came to protect the Lord's Supper. It becomes common, everyday, mundane, and holy, and unholy to us if we're not careful. And that's why we take time to reflect on on what's being done and what's being said. When we come together, though, we have to ask another question. Am I here for my own benefit? Or am I here for the benefit of my brothers and sisters? Or am I here from God? The emphatic answer there is, yes. I'm here for all of that. I'm here to encourage myself. I'm here to encourage my brothers and sisters. I'm here to praise my God. But when we've shifted the focus away from God, we're supposed to be priority back on us. We have turned this special worship into something that is profane. What about our relationships? The third thing that we see here is our relationships. Think about these false relationships that he had. Isaac is the only positive relationship he has in his family. And it's because they share a commonality. They both enjoy the hunt and the wild game, and Esau is kind of a man's man. And we see that his brother despised him because of his favoritism. The relationship, that blessed and amazing family relationship, became fractured and shattered. So that's special. That's what we see as holy. The family relationship is treated as common, something to be thrown away and split up. And then Esau allows for his relationships with those in the world, all of his wives, to drive him away from God. Again, treating that as profane. Turn over to James chapter 5. James chapter 5. He talks about this very idea of relationships here in verse 16. James 5. In verse 16, he says, therefore, confess your sins to one another and pray for one another so that you might be healed. The effective prayer of a righteous man can accomplish much. Our relationships with one another are supposed to be special. They're supposed to be this close family bond so we can be there to encourage one another. We should be sharing with one another our problems and our struggles, not trying to hide them in the dark away from each one of us. Sharing, making everyone know so that they can help you and lift you up. We're supposed to be one body. Paul talks about it in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 12 through 26. We're not going to read all that section because it's a lot. But there's two specific verses I want to look at here. 1 Corinthians chapter 12. In verses 24 through 25. He says, but God has so composed the body, giving more abundant honor to a member which lacked, so that there may be no division in the body, but that the members may have the same care for one another. This section is all about each of the family members being treated as one body. Unique parts. Some as the ears, some as the eyes, some as the mouth, some as the feet to lead. But if everybody was that same part, it wouldn't be able to function. The body itself would fall apart and fail. But everyone needs to work together, to come together to make this one body work as it is supposed to. How can we be one body, one family, if we're choosing to let the things of the world overcome these meaningful relationships with one another, making them profane? Make sure to avoid our relationships, these special ones, becoming common and profane. And lastly is this, our lives. So easy to let our lives become profane in God's eyes. Remember, Esau had the chance to become the next patriarch of the family. Instead, he seems to waste away his time focusing on the things of the world. He gave away his birthright because he was hungry. Because he couldn't place his hunger. He failed in the hunt that day. And as he focused on his daily things, beginning to go back to God, he let his idolatrous family, extended family, drive him away, bring him away. Have you realized in our lives, remember, we're made in the image of God? Genesis 1:26 says, we are made in his image. We were created in God's image. And in that creation, we are made with an intense desire to worship. He wanted to have a relationship with beings who would worship him at their own choosing. It was because they loved him, not because they were created to as the angels were. We're all created to worship. And Jesus says in Matthew 6, verse 24, that you're really going to be given only two choices of being in worship. Matthew 6, verse 24. He says, no one can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God, and my version says, well, some say mammon. There's going to be one of two things you serve, either God or the things that drive the world. Nowadays, it's actual money. Back then, it was animals and spices and foods. Very physical things that required every single day commitment. Nowadays, you can just sit by and collect wealth or let wealth drive you, but you're going to worship one of two things. Either God or you're going to worship the world. Are we making our lives dedicated to God or the things of the world? Something special that He created for us. Us. For the world. Or what about just even us? What does Paul call us in 1 Corinthians chapter 3? 1 Corinthians chapter 3, he calls us something very special, something important. Call us a temple. So in verse 16, chapter 3 and verse 16, do you not know that you are a temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? If any man destroys the temple of God, God will destroy him. For the temple of God is holy. And that is what you are. Our lives are meant to be holy. Once we have given our lives back to God and made ourselves a temple, a place for Him to come in and to dwell, like the temple of old, something that's supposed to be special about that place where people come and dwell in our hearts, exist and outpour, so the people of the world can see this special relationship we have. If we come in and we destroy it, or make it all about other things in the world, these other gods, other places our focus is at, it says God will destroy him. That's scary. It's a strong warning to us about taking something that is holy. We are supposed to be holy. But we make our lives common and separated from God, we're going to be destroyed. This powerful. This scary. Go back to Hebrews chapter 12. As we conclude, I want to look one more time at the importance of what is said there in Hebrews chapter 12. See to it that no one comes short of the grace of God. That no root of bitterness springing up causes trouble, and by it many be defiled. A warning. Don't let your lives become profane. Don't let your lives become about the things of the world and cause others to struggle. That there be no immoral or godless person like Esau. No immoral or profane person like Esau. Who sold his own birthright for a single meal. Esau lived a rather spiritually empty life. He had the chance to have it all. And even after he gave up the special blessing, he still had the opportunity to come and serve the Lord and to be remembered in the scriptures as a faithful person, a servant of God. But instead, he rejects God and the promise that was given to his ancestors that their lives and their lineage would go on as long as they stayed with God and continued to worship with Him. He rejected all of it. choosing to accept the wages of sin instead of the payment that God was willing to give. We all have the same birthright as Esau. We have all been paid for. 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 20. For you have been bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body. Jesus paid the price for each and every person, not just in this room, not just in your families, but everyone in the world. Everyone has the same opportunity. We've all been paid for. The question for this morning is, are we going to continue living our lives as we want in what we see as profane ways, taking what is supposed to be holy and special, throwing it away as common? Or are we going to submit what is most precious to us, our choices, our freedom, our lives? Are we going to choose to submit to give back to Him, who we know loves us beyond all? We're going to make our lives and our time profane. Encourage you this morning, if anybody needs to make their lives right, to no longer live a profane life, and to come back to Him, to be treated as holy once again, we offer this chance now as we stand and as we sing.